everybody. I'm Janelle Crothers, a technology evangelist for Microsoft, and today we're here talking about rollback plans and DevOps with Keith Mayer. Good morning, Keith.
Hey, good morning, Janelle. How are you today? Thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome.
Great. Well, I'm excited to talk with you and everybody that's tuning in with us today about rollback planning. I know that's an evil word in some IT organizations.
You know, I'd have to say I agree with you there. I almost feel like a little bit like if you're rolling back, you've almost sort of failed. But I know that's not the case. You have to have good rollback plans in order to have good roll forward plans. So I'm hoping you can tell us a lot more about that today.
Yeah, definitely. And I look at it as a learning opportunity, right? You know, especially in continuous integration and delivery of solutions where organizations are rapidly delivering solutions more and more frequently, more on a quicker pace than ever before, having an effective rollback plan as well as a roll forward plan is really important. So you can fail fast, learn from the failures, get back to it, a stable version of your application, correct those issues, and then roll forward again.
Well, great. Should we jump right into the questions?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's get started. So it seems like most DevOps teams spend a lot of time on those roll-forward plans for new code releases, but rollbacks are always a chore. Why is this?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think part of it is because as DevOps teams are under pressure to deliver on that faster solution cycle we were talking about, they have less and less time to do coding that's non-core to the solutions they're delivering. So they spend a lot of time on developing the solutions and testing those solutions, and they spend some time on developing that roll-forward plan of how to get their solution into production. But it seems like the rollback planning is always one of those low-priority items because, you know, hey, they don't have that much time in their cycles, and they're trying to concentrate on getting the solution out to the users as quickly as possible. I think the other piece of it is that a lot of DevOps teams, from a developer standpoint, often believe that, hey, you know, from a developer standpoint, this is not going to fail. You know, they're very optimistic from a code standpoint. And it's not saying that their code is bad. It's just saying that once their code rolls into production, there may be some unanticipated variables or circumstances that cause some blips or issues. And, you know, a lot of developers don't necessarily think that way, and so they focus on going forward and not back. But we know from an operations standpoint, it's important to be able to easily and smoothly roll forward and roll back, right?
Right, because sometimes being able to recover fast even looks better than being able to move forward quickly.
Definitely, yeah, exactly. So the quicker you can learn from those failures and get all your users back to stability again, the better off you are from an operations standpoint, to be sure.
Yeah, totally agree. So how can Azure help streamline the roll forward and roll back process?
That's a great question. Yeah, Azure as a cloud platform, of course, has a lot of agility baked into the platform itself, where, you know, a lot of the complexities around infrastructure and application dependencies and requirements can be very quickly provisioned, configured, roll forward and roll back. And so Azure has a variety of ways of doing that, depending on what architecture, what cloud model you're developing for. You know, if you're developing on the infrastructure as a service model using VMs, it's got some great capabilities there. And then if you're using platform as a service with cloud services or mobile services or Azure websites, there's actually some native capabilities in terms of deployment slots that can be leveraged for rolling between different code releases, different solution releases.
And you don't have to pick one or the other in there. You can use a combination of all of those solutions.
Yeah, that definitely. I think one of the great aspects of the Azure platform is that we are, I think, the only global cloud vendor that has been proven out, you know, even by vendors, by consultants like Gartner, who's places in the leaders quadrant, across not just infrastructure as a service, but platform as a service and software as a service offerings across Azure and Office 365. And by being all part of one consistent platform, it allows DevOps teams, both developers and operations engineers, to work together on integrated solutions. A common scenario might be having a line of business application. It's currently running on premises. You want to be able to reduce cost of running that line of business application, so you use IaaS in Azure to do a lift and shift and move it up as a set of VMs running up in the cloud. but and Azure will do that model fine, but that's where a lot of other competing cloud platforms leave you. You know, once you have VMs in the cloud, they're like, great, if you've got VMs in the cloud, you're finished. That's the end of our strategy with you. Whereas from our standpoint, that's only the beginning of the cloud strategy. And by leveraging PaaS and SaaS, it allows DevOps teams, both on the development and the operations engineering side, to move quicker than ever in solution delivery. Because, I mean, let's face it, from an operations standpoint, I don't think I've ever met an IT pro that has told me they love patching operating systems on virtual machines. Have you?
No. Even when I did it, it wasn't my favorite chore.
Right. So part of what PaaS and SaaS offers are pre-built environments that where operations engineers don't have to worry about patching and stability of the underlying API and operating system components. And that's a real value from an operations standpoint, because then you can focus on scaling, monitoring, managing, and operating against a larger number of solutions that are having greater business impact. From a development side, PaaS and SaaS being integrated into even existing IaaS solutions provide developers with the ability to leverage a set of building blocks, if you will, for building their applications or extending existing applications very quickly. So, for instance, if identity management needs to be brought into place, rather than a developer building their own user authentication system as part of an application, they can leverage Azure Active Directory. Or if mobile device access and notification has to be extended for an application, they can leverage Azure Mobile Services to provide that capability. Media streaming, content caching and delivery, queuing, storage, SQL relational databases, all of those pre-built components are something that a developer can then leverage, pull together quickly to provide the plumbing of their application. And then the code that the developer is writing is really the code that only they can write. It's the business logic code, the code that's unique to their business application from an operational perspective in their organization. So it helps to optimize their time as well. So we have this whole vision of, IaaS is great for running existing workloads, moving them to a lower cost, more agile platform as a set of virtual machines on virtual networks in the cloud. But it doesn't end there. As you're looking to enhance those solutions as part of the solution delivery ongoing life cycle, PaaS and SaaS offer great opportunities. Yeah.
So if you're just starting out and you're really concentrating on infrastructure as a service, what about mm-hmm. those virtual machines? Does Azure have anything to help with the roll forward and roll back of those?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you're using IaaS as your initial model and using virtual machines up in Azure, you've got several choices. If you have an existing release management system, maybe using Visual Studio and TFS on premises or using Visual Studio Online as our cloud-based solution, you can certainly use a lot of the release management capabilities that you've probably used for managing code releases across virtual machines on premises up in the Azure cloud as well. Once you have a site-to-site connection in place, you can manage them as VMs that are part of your existing data center network. It's just that portion of the data center lives up in Azure. So Azure provides virtual networking and site-to-site connectivity for that piece, but native to VMs as well, and a few of these features were actually just recently released, are the ability to, at a VM level, be able to take existing VMs and capture them as a stateful VM image with all of the disks and everything intact. And then also at a storage level, those VMs have their virtual hard disks stored in blob storage, and the blob storage system has its own snapshotting and blob copy capabilities that are exposed through PowerShell or a variety of other APIs. So if you were looking to do more of a multi-version backup and recovery process, kind of bare metal for virtual machines that are running up in Azure, to capture all the virtual hard disks, you've got a few choices for being able to capture that, and then if there's issues, be able to quickly roll back to a prior image of the application.
That's really, really helpful. So I also hear a lot about continuous deployment of code releases, but that always seems risky, that you're just constantly changing your software. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so it's interesting, because depending on the community that an IT pro is working inside, there's vastly different views of it. In the startup space, the cloud ISV space, continuous delivery of solutions has become more of a norm. you know, some of the cloud vendors like the Facebooks and Twitters and whatnot of the world are on a very aggressive cycle of, in some cases, doing multiple new releases on a weekly or in some cases even daily basis. And so for them, it's become a very controlled process. Their releases aren't making huge sweeping changes. They've gone down the path of having minor releases that are adding minor incremental functionality so that their risk is mitigated through that. In the enterprise space, the space that you and I and a lot of our audience comes from, typically where I see continuous delivery employed is quickly getting the dev to test to UAT process of a release cycle accelerated so that when a developer is building new code, they do some basic functional and operational testing of their own. They want to be able to push that out to a broader test or in some cases a user acceptance testing team for staging purposes. And so oftentimes what enterprises are looking at is saying, hey, when my developers check in a code release, I want to immediately push that code release out to our staging environment or our UAT environment so that when our base of testers or our application stakeholders are testing and reviewing the application, they're always testing against the latest release without having to do anything special from that standpoint. It's all baked into the process, automated. As soon as the code gets checked in, it gets pushed out for testing. And then in a lot of enterprise shops, they still have a workflow process, either manual or semi-automated, for then taking the approved releases that have been tested and moving them over into a production slot, into production for access by a broader user base. Wonderful. So definitely something you can mitigate and manage based on the requirements for your environment. But the other piece that I see, that type of continuous innovation or continuous delivery happening is also in environments that aren't developing applications themselves from the ground up, because a lot of that same workflow process is also useful even if you're using packaged applications that you're purchasing or subscribing to from a vendor and deploying as virtual machines or Azure websites or Azure cloud services, for instance. You know, oftentimes there's configuration changes that accompany a new version of any application. And so from an IT pro standpoint, a lot of those same types of approaches can take place of developing processes to quickly get that new version in a safe manner out to users for testing and then be able to quickly move over to production or roll back into testing if there's issues.
Right. Yeah, I definitely remember that experience working working in my own data center, trying to roll out applications that come from other vendors, because there's still questions about whether or not that's going to, you know, cause any problems within your existing infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, so I think that's one of the misnomers about DevOps is a lot of organizations, a lot of IT pros and developers alike look at DevOps as something that's unique just to custom developed applications, but there's a lot of DevOps principles that can help operations teams even in those third party or packaged application solutions.
Wonderful. You make it actually sound so easy. Could we step through some of this? Do you have any
demos? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, let's head over to the lab and we'll take a look at it together.
Great.
So hey, Janelle, thanks for joining me over in the lab.
I'm excited to see what you have to show us.
And so over on this display, we're looking at the Azure portal, the portal that we've been using all throughout the series for managing different Azure resources. And let's talk about virtual machines first. I know we talked a little bit about that. So I'm going to go over to the virtual machines tab. And one of the new features that was announced just a few weeks ago at TechEd in North America that we had mentioned when we were chatting earlier in this episode was the ability to capture VMs that are already provisioned. And a lot of people don't realize that we've made some changes to this, because we've had this capture button down on the Azure portal page forever, but capture in the past was always for what we call generalized VMs, VMs where we ran a sysprep against them and we're capturing them into an image that we would then be able to use to deploy multiple VMs. And that's all well and fine, but when we're talking about kind of rolling forward and rolling back, that whole sysprep process throws a real wrench into the game, because the generalization that sysprep does removes a lot of the configuration items that are important to maintaining the state of that version of the application, right?
Right.
And so now what we have is the ability, if we have a VM, whether it's stopped or running, we have the ability to capture it. And when we're capturing it, you notice that it says, hey, this virtual machine is not stopped. It'll still allow us to capture it as a live image. Or if we go over to a stopped VM, let me just go ahead and cancel out of this. If we go over to one of our stopped VMs when we capture, it gives us this ability to say, yes, I have run sysprep, or no, I haven't. So first, if we capture a running VM, one of the things to keep, so it's capturing it with all of the state information, that's all the configuration that's persistent inside that VM. So it's not expecting it to be sysprep. It's expecting to be a live capture of the VM. One of the things to keep in mind is that today, capturing a running VM, although it captures its configuration, it's not a crash-consistent or application-consistent capture. And so if you're going to capture a running VM, you'd want to stop any of your services that are configured and quiesce the VM internally, and then you can capture it. If you capture a non-running VM, you can capture it and give it a label and click OK. And as long as you don't check the I have run sysprep box, it'll capture it, it'll leave your existing VM in place, it'll capture a copy of that over to an image that you can then deploy as another VM. So you could have a couple different VMs that are supporting an application across various images of your application configuration. And when you're rolling forward and rolling back, you might just be changing DNS pointers between those various VMs, for instance. So once that image is captured, it'll appear over on the Images tab. I've got a VM image that I captured a little earlier as a non-sysprepped image. And just like sysprepped VM images that we capture, all of these images also appear when we're building new VMs. So once I've got a set of image captures of various VMs, when I go to my From Gallery list and click on my images, we'll see those images listed here. And you'll notice that we've added a new OS state field for specialized images versus generalized images. So the generalized images, those are the ones that you ran sysprep against before capturing, and those are the images that could be used for building multiple VMs from a common image base because they're generalized. The specialized images, those are the images that you're capturing for getting a copy of the current configuration of that application so that you can build another VM as an alternate version of that application for maybe for rollback purposes, for instance. Does that make sense, that difference between generalized versus specialized, do you think?
Yes, I think it does, because then the generalized one, it basically allows you to sort of fork off your development a little bit.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So you can have a couple different copies of the same application running across different VMs and have different images that you're applying changes to for testing versus production and whatnot. Now, a lot of people in the DevOps space will ask, well, that's great that I can do that through the portal. How can I automate that? And so the automation of this can also be accomplished through PowerShell. And if I drop over to PowerShell, we'll see that I've got a sample PowerShell script here. Let me just close down some of these windows so we can step through some of the PowerShell code. We'll also have this code out as a set of reference items on the page that everyone's viewing today's episode on at the bottom. But after signing into my Azure account and selecting the Azure subscription that I wish to automate against, you'll notice that we've added the Save Azure VM Image commandlet that allows us to automate the capturing of an Azure VM image. And if we want to make that into that specialized configuration where we're not running sysprep against it, there's an OS state parameter that's new with the latest release of the Azure PowerShell module that allows us to tell it that this is going to be a specialized, a non-sysprepped capture. And then if we want to spin up another VM against that image so that we can manage multiple instances of our application for versioning purposes, we can, down a little further here, just run our new Azure VM or new Azure Quick VM commandlet. And then for the image name, just specify that specialized image name that we gave it. And you'll notice because this is a specialized image, I'm not feeding in any parameters on my new Azure Quick VM command line to specify like a new admin username or password or any of that, because all that's preserved as part of the specialized image that I captured, since it's not a sysprep-based image. So you can take these basic PowerShell commandlets and put them into a regular scheduled script or runbook that would run on perhaps a daily or a weekly basis if you wanted to take what you're running in production, capture it to an image, and then repurpose a VM that's running that, you know, yesterday's version of the code, for instance, so you can quickly roll things back. And of course, the way that you can automate all that is through Azure Automation, which we talked about in one of our other episodes. But right out on the Azure portal, when we drill down here, there's Azure Automation that allows us to create an automation account and basically define within our automation account a set of runbooks that have the PowerShell code that we want to run on a scheduled or triggered basis. So if I just go into this particular runbook, you'll see it's just normal PowerShell code that's set up as a PowerShell workflow. In this case, this is just doing a basic stop Azure VM, but it could just as easily be replaced with the commandlets for capturing an image and redeploying new VMs on a regular scheduled basis.
Wow, and that definitely takes away a lot of the uncertainty about rolling back, because there you are capturing things right before you change them and could easily roll back to those things.
Yep, definitely. Now, we also mentioned that for VMs, because virtual hard disks that the VMs are running on are stored in Azure's Blob Storage storage service, that we have the ability to do blob storage copies as well. So if you were looking to do, instead of an image of the VM, if you wanted to do more of an ongoing series of backups on a daily basis and then be able to quickly revert a VM back to, you know, a particular backup from yesterday or the day before that or the day before that, and bring in the entire configuration of the VMs, do the equivalent of like a bare metal recovery of those VMs, you can take advantage of the Azure Blob storage service to do that. And I've got another Azure PowerShell script that where I've defined some different functions for doing things like a blob snapshot or checkpoint and a blob restore. And the cool thing is, once these functions are all defined, and again, we'll have a link that everybody can use to download this base code out on the page, but once they're all defined, it becomes a single line of code in PowerShell to call that function and specify the VM and cloud service and a checkpoint that you wish to create. And it'll go through the process of stopping the VM temporarily, checkpointing it, restarting the VM on a nightly basis to get a good solid image capture. And then similarly, if you need to restore against any of those checkpoints up in Blob Storage, we've got a simple function for doing that as well. So you can use both of these solutions, the image capture and the blob snapshotting or blob copying capability, together as part of a strategy where you might use the image capture as part of a one-off as you're deploying new changes. Perhaps you take a capture of the existing VM first, just before you deploy those changes to your existing production application. That way you can revert back very quickly. Whereas the blob copy or snapshot approach you might use on an ongoing basis as part of a schedule to capture, to back up the complete state of a set of running VMs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Cool. Now, so that's the IaaS side of things.
Right, what else you
machines.
Got?
Yeah, so when we start getting into platform as a service, things get even more empowering. So if I go back to the Azure portal, I'm going to go to one of our platform components. I'm going to go over to Azure websites that can be used for deploying custom web applications, regardless if they're .NET or Node.js or PHP or whatnot, Java-based. You can deploy web applications using our Azure Websites platform component very quickly. And if I drill into the properties of one of my Azure websites here and just expand it out, you'll notice that I've got this other test deployment slot that's listed here. So with our PaaS components, what we have is the ability to take an application that's running under a particular URL and then define a set of additional deployment slots. So to get this test deployment slot, basically what each of those deployment slots are, by the way, is basically a separate copy of your application that you can deploy code to as part of your versioning process. So I can deploy to test separate from production, and I can swap these deployment slots around to roll forward and roll back. To get that test deployment slot there, what I did first is I drilled into the properties of my Azure website, and on the dashboard page of my Azure web app, I went down to this quick glance link that says add a new deployment slot. So I clicked on that, and we've already got test, so let's add a staging deployment slot that we might use for user acceptance testing, for UAT testing. And when you're creating a new deployment slot, you can say, which deployment slot do you want to clone this from? So do you want to take the existing configuration of your application from deployment slot, either production or one of your other deployment slots, and make an initial clone into this new deployment slot? So I'll just take production and make a copy into staging, and that change will complete in a few seconds. There we go, it's completed, and now we'll see we've got two deployment slots in our production application. So we've got test, we've got staging, and we've got our production application. Now, from a Visual Studio developer standpoint, this gives kind of some great dev capabilities to your developers on your DevOps team. If they pop into Visual Studio, for instance, and they're going to create their web application, you know, as a basic application here, when they're ready to publish that to the Azure platform for testing or staging or whatnot, they can click Publish, and when they select Azure, in this case Azure Websites, and step through that process under selecting our website and whatnot, under our existing websites, it'll show all of those separate deployment slots uniquely. So it gives a developer the ability to say very easily right from within Visual Studio, am I deploying to test, am I deploying to staging, or am I deploying to production for the changes? So even in a small shop, that becomes a really quick and easy way of being able to determine where in the solution lifecycle you're deploying to, with as many deployment slots as you need to map to your testing and solution delivery cycles.
And they don't even have to leave the tool that they're familiar with.
Exactly. They can stay all inside Visual Studio from a development standpoint. We've seen a lot of great feedback from developers on being able to do that. Now, the way that a lot of organizations will do this in larger dev teams is they'll have their developers deploying to a test slot, and they'll use that test deployment slot for team functional testing within the development team. And then what the developers can do when they pass their initial testing of their own on that test slot is they can right click on their solution, and under their source control area they can check in that, so those changes in their solution. And that check-in could be to Visual Studio TFS on premises, it could be to a Git repository, or it could be to Visual Studio Online, like is what we're using here. Visual Studio Online is basically our source code control release management solution in the cloud. And so they can be able to check that in and perhaps have a more well-orchestrated UAT process around that checked-in code then. So what a lot of DevOps teams are doing is from that checked-in code in their source control repository, what they'll do is they'll set up one of the deployment slots, like the staging deployment slot in Azure, for receiving continuous deployments. So you'll notice when I go into my staging slot, I've got integrate source control listed right on the main page. And if I click on that, what this allows me to do is right from my Azure portal, as an operations person, I can say, hey, I want to set up continuous delivery of any of that checked-in code from my source control repository to this staging slot. So I don't have to worry about manually working with my dev teams to get their tested code into staging and all that. And I have lots of different deployment choices. We talked about a couple, Visual Studio Online and TFS, but if there's dev teams that are using Git or GitHub or Dropbox or even an FTP site, you can wire that up for continuous deployment. So if I select Visual Studio Online here and plug in my Visual Studio Online URL for my subscription, I'll go ahead and authorize that. Ooh, and I have to type it right. always forget where the S goes in that. So we'll, let's see. Maybe I have this IT. Ah, there we go. Must have had it typed wrong. So it'll allow me to authorize my connection request. So I'll go ahead and accept that. And then in my Visual Studio Online repository, it'll allow me to select any of the projects that I've already had developers working on and checking in. So we'll say that this dev team, they're working on our demo project. And anytime they check in code that they've developed and tested in the dev team to our source control repository, I want to immediately deploy that to my staging environment. So I'll go ahead and click OK, and now it'll go through the process of actually wiring that up so that I don't have to worry about separately deploying into staging. And then, once my user acceptance testing completes and the business stakeholders are happy with the latest version of the application in staging, the next step you might be wondering about is, okay, well, how do I get that into production, right? I mean, that's really where the, from an operations standpoint, that's where the proof comes into the in the pudding, right? How quickly can you get this into production in a stable way, and how quickly can you roll back? Well, from our standpoint, if we go down to our web application, so here's our web application that we had that staging slot and the test slot underneath. Down at the bottom, you'll see swap as a button. So here's how easy it is to get staging into production. We click swap, and we say we want to swap what's in staging with what's in production, and click the OK button. And in a few moments, those two versions of our application code will be swapped, and whatever was in staging will now be in production and vice versa. So that gives us a really easy roll forward plan once we're comfortable with what's in staging, but it also gives us a really easy rollback plan because we can also use this to roll back if we need to from production to staging by swapping them again.
Right, so awesome. It's just flipping switches.
Yep, and you could actually take advantage of the swapping capability with multiple deployment slots to say, hey, I want to take what's in production and swap it over first to another, you know, older version, and then when I swap into staging, you know, I'm managing across those deployment slots multiple versions of the application, and I can choose which do I want to swap back into production or swap out. So I could swap from, you know, staging to pre-approved slot, and then swap from pre-approved to production, and be able to have a pretty comprehensive release management cycle, all managed from the Azure portal. And of course, all that stuff you can automate with PowerShell as well. All the deployment slot capabilities, that's all built into our latest Azure PowerShell module.
So you don't even have to touch the portal if you don't want to.
Right. Yeah. So you can have it all wired up to a workflow process. You know, we've got actually in TFS and Visual Studio Online, you could wire it up to a release management process that you've built in there with some workflow around it, and never have to touch the Azure portal. So what do you think? Does that make it easier from a rollback and roll forward standpoint for IT pros?
I think it makes it a lot easier. You know, from a whole bunch of different levels, even if we're, just like you mentioned before, even if you're working with third-party things or building in-house, it looks like there's a lot of different options to get in there and make this a whole lot easier just to keep things smooth and under control.
Yep, definitely. And what I love about it is it allows me to provide a very quick rollback, safe rollback, without requiring my dev team in my DevOps project team, the dev roles, to do any additional coding, to have the rollback functionality deployed. So I'm not putting more stress on them to do more coding in this accelerated timeline. I'm taking advantage of some of the cloud and platform features that Azure and Visual Studio Online provides to make it very seamless.
Well, I would imagine if you're rolling back something, it means your dev team has already got something to work on, so they don't need to be worrying about how to roll back.
Exactly. Yep, definitely.
Well, thank you for all of that, Keith. I think you gave everybody a great idea about how they can use Azure and IIS and Visual Studio and a lot of the other deployment tools to really smooth out some of their roll forward and roll back challenges.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me and having me on the show today, Janelle. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, definitely I'd encourage anyone that's watching us today to be sure to check out the resources that are listed below on the page that you're watching the video on, because there's lots of great resources, some on your blog, some on my blog. We've got a pretty comprehensive DevOps series right now that has lots more coverage. And I'm excited because DevOps, I think, is really an area that we as IT pros can help to embrace, help to accelerate, and deliver more quality solutions in our environment by working closer with our dev teams. I think it brings our visibility into the business organization much more clearly than you know, administering the infrastructure in an environment would have in the past.
It's not about keeping things static anymore. It's about figuring out how to integrate the latest changes in the best way possible.
Definitely. Yeah, and automation is going to be a huge piece of that as well. We looked at some of the automation in this episode, but there's a lot more covered in our series around automation. I think the way that Jeffrey Snover has put it, it resonated well with a lot of IT pros, of making sure we're thinking about our servers and our applications not as pets, but as cattle. Use automation to guide down the path that we need them to go down to get those solutions delivered as quickly and as stably as possible.
Right, right. Well, thank you once again for joining us.
Great, thanks. Yep, and thank you everybody for joining us as well. We look forward to seeing you on our next TechNet Radio episode 2 for DevOps.